Real Nerds is a proud partner of the Denver Podcast Network. In the shadow of the mountains,
we speak.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to this John of All Trades podcast promo. Each Wednesday, I bring you a brand new interview with someone fascinating and ask the question we all ask when we meet someone new. Hey, what do you do? It's fun, informative, and it's the 2017 Westward Reader's Choice Award winner for Best Denver Podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, and johnofalltrades.us.
Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Andre Gower.
And I'm Ryan Lambert.
And you're listening to
Real Nerds Podcast.
Hey everybody, here's an exciting Real Nerds interview that we did at Denver Comic Con 2018. Hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm always waiting for the tech guys.
It's always like, the tech guys.
You know what, it's really hard to be the talents because the tech guys, I have to wait for them to be ready. I just want them to be ready all the time.
It's like my problem with the editors.
Yes.
They're like my tech guys.
Yeah, they are your tech guys.
Right, they are my tech guys.
We know.
Yeah.
Then he's even late on the queues.
Yeah, look at that. And then trying to look adorable
and,
behind the table.
I know, and then he's editing me, like you. What's that about?
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
We're at the mercy of the tech folk.
I know. I need to learn stuff and quit being
and
at the mercy
rid
of them.
See? Oh my God.
Oh my goodness. Welcome to Real Nerds Podcast live at Denver Comic Con 2018. And every once in a while, we get a super cool guest stop by. And why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, I would be more than happy to. I am Suzanne Lambden. Let me see. I have many different credits, but I'm kind of known in the Colorado area for my Dead Hearts novels. And so it's zombie apocalypse in Colorado Springs.
Heck yeah.
And in Denver. But what you want to know about is so back in, well, the early 90s, I have screen credit, wrote for Star Trek Next Generation.
Yes. We love to hear about your Colorado connections, too, because we're from Colorado. And
nice.
So, you know, we need to represent the 303, or in your case, the 970. I mean, we got to make sure that we're all represented.
I do love
Are you 719?
Colorado. 719.
You're 719.
The Colorado is wonderful.
It is.
You know, I got tired. I love The Walking Dead. I'm kind of tired of it now.
Yeah.
But when it first came out, when I started writing my Dead Heart series, I had ridden through Pikes Peak area. And so I thought, why in the hell would you want to be in hot Atlanta? Right,
yeah.
I want to be up in the mountains looking down at the zombies.
You know what's funny, Suzanne, is I thought the same thing. Like, if the zombies ever came, I wouldn't go to cities. I would just go up.
Go up and out. And you think about, too, even from the Front Range on further back into the Rockies, there's so many, like, even old hotels or abandoned stagecoach places.
True.
It's just really cool old buildings that you could go and barricade in and be protected. Why would you ever go to the city and expose yourself to the zombies when you can go into the wilderness? Live off the land and hunt and fresh game, you're fine.
Yeah,
right?
That's what
Stay
I'm saying.
Stay away from people.
Because the further away away, the less zombies are going to be, because eventually they're going to rot out. I don't know.
You know, eventually they have to rot out.
Yeah.
And eventually, right, think about even with me, when you're writing about zombies, why do they always have good denture care? Why are their teeth so strong that they can bite you
yeah.
and bite through anything when we know if you were rotting, your teeth are rotting out of your mouth, and plus everything you eat is coming out of your guts or your butt. Right,
yeah.
Everything's just falling apart. You're constantly decaying until eventually you're too weak to do anything but lay there and piss and moan.
So, I have to ask, do your zombies run or walk?
So, I have actually 8 different kinds of zombies.
Oh.
Dude, so my zombies start out nice, virus zombies, right? People caught the virus, they died, they came back, slow moving. The kind that you really want to meet.
Yeah.
But eventually, I have a bunch of kinds of supernatural. So when the virus comes back around, some of my main characters get bitten by a zombie, and the virus is mutated, so there's also vampires. It's really weird. So there's superhuman level, So some of them, if they get bitten by a zombie, zombies are healed, like, for the day. You remember who you are. You heal as is, but then later they become super level. So I have a super, like, superhero level zombies moving through the Rockies. They cull the herd, so they eat their cripples and the slow-moving zombies. So they eat their own. And then they're just moving fast through the Rockies.
So you're saying this is a pretty violent book.
It is. They do take Fort Carson. You're thinking about whenever anybody does zombie apocalypse and if this Colorado's featured, I hear the thing is that Fort Carson's got to go.
Yeah.
But I do love it. That means I'm, and I didn't spare the Air Force Academy or, you know, Shreveport or Peterson.
There's,
they
a lot of food for them to eat.
There is.
Yeah.
How I have in my series, too, I have NORAD. So remember, it's funny, I tried to do a tour there a couple of years ago. I got turned away at the gate. But someone goes, well, if you're going to do NORAD, right, that blast door. Okay, the blast door's open just a little bit, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't sealed, and then there's a nice, fun surprise inside.
Awesome. So I have an uncle who's in the military in Colorado Springs, and I always thought it was odd how close the houses are together and how many people are in such a concentrated area.
That is true. They are.
Yeah, that'd be bad for zombies.
It really would.
I would drive up to Pikes Peak.
So I have, here, it makes you laugh. So, yeah, I do love Pikes Peak. So, and I have I told you I have 8 different kinds of zombies. Eventually, right, so we're killing the zombies. We're having bonfires. The zombie ash gets into the water supply system, like the old mines here in Colorado. And you know how you have all the toxins that go into the river and pollute?
Oh, yeah.
Well, so the zombie ash does. And so then eventually, then I have tree zombies.
Wow.
So then you have the evolution of the zombie virus. And so now trees are infected. So then you get carnivorous trees that are then eating the dead that are buried in the ground. So the dead are rising from graves, but vines are sticking out of them.
Awesome.
And then trees are walking with human body parts. And so anything I could throw at, you know,
you
I'm not
that,
like the Front Range.
And I picture Mortal Kombat. They have a living forest and the trees eat people in it.
I do. So I
love
have
it.
It. And I have mine concentrated from Cripple Creek into Toronto Florescent up to Strawberry Mountain is a lovely eating ground. But, of course, in Pikes Peak, it's just weird. Whatever I could throw at it, however many weird kind of zombies I can have, I have. And I have some zombies, you know, they look like great like you. But to look that good, you have to eat brains every day.
Well, yeah, sexy doesn't take a day off.
Yeah, you know, it really doesn't.
It doesn't. So, obviously inspired by the Colorado Springs area, do people read your books in other places and they're able to relate to it?
They do. The funny thing is... And eventually, maybe I'll end up doing like a type of a bus tour. But then I have a lot of people from other states take my novels. I'll take the Dead Hearts novels, in particular, book 2 in it. So any kind of tourist attraction you can think of in El Paso County, I use it. And so it makes me laugh. So then when I come to events, everyone assumes I'm... So I'm not from Colorado. I'm not a Coloradan. Mm. I've just always come to Colorado every year. But I use... Got anything from the cliff dwellings, Cave of the Winds has werewolves. But Miramount, so this is great.
So
Miramount Castle, you cannot enter Miramount Castle with my novels in hand. I'm banned from the Broadmoor Hotel. So I guess on their website, they say they're very unhappy because I blew it up and there's evil vampires living there. There's evil vampires living at Miramount Castle. And so I had fans with the book. Went there and they said, we do not condone these evil vampire children killing the people that come in for the teas, the afternoon teas. Garden of the Gods is in it. And so the tourist folks up there said, we don't condone eating tourists. It's like, you don't? They're delicious.
Yeah. And see, if I was like in charge of stuff like that, but that's awesome because you get notoriety and it looks cool. It's like the Outlook Hotel, you know, you got to have that stuff.
Well, they will say, I'll say one of the cons, so Galaxy Fest, I'll give them a plug out of Colorado Springs. They have me as a celebrity every year, and they'll fly me in and really are happy that I have written so much about so many wonderful areas in Colorado. There's so many cool things to discover. I think there has even Erie Castle there in Garden of the Gods. If you've never been there before, it's like a Wayne, like Batman's mansion in the middle of the Garden of the Gods, tucked back there, and it's absolutely fantastic. Plus, the place is haunted as hell.
Yeah, oh, it has to be.
And Manitou, and it's funny, whenever I go into Colorado Springs or Manitou, everybody's got a haunted, some scary story. Which I'm told that, so I'm friends with some of the cops from Manitou Springs, mm-hmm. So they tell me that a lot of their calls, like say 50% when they go in, something strange has happened in the household, but when you're filling out your report, you can't say that you entered and books were flying across the room. But they say they really actually see strange stuff. So
you never know.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know what you
want.
And
did you know
into.
That every purple house you see in Manitou is the home of a witch? The Wiccans. Purple houses, purple doors. That's the sign.
So is purple the color of a witch?
Yes, I guess it is.
I did not know that.
I didn't either. So I have all this in that my Crazy Dead Heart series, because it's more than zombies. It's any genre you can think of, I added to it.
It sounds supernatural and awesome.
It is really fun.
Awesome. So when I met Captain Spaulding earlier, he also told me that you worked at Paramount and you helped write several episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation.
I did.
And he said you got screen credit on one. And
I do.
There's more stories behind other episodes.
There's some really X-rated stories, too.
Oh,
I did that. The Enterprise crew, they're pretty, there's some wild guys.
Yeah.
It's
okay. We're an explicit podcast. Well, you can tell us stories.
I might tell you one of the stories. But here, so my episode is season 4, episode 76, Family. So my contribution is, this is the episode where Picard had been a Borg and he goes home to the French vineyard to stay with his brother. But Wesley Crusher had met his dad when he turned 18 on the holodeck. So in my version, in The Wish, which turned into Family, it was interactive. So Jack Crusher could answer all of Wesley Crusher's storylines. Because I loved me some Wesley Crusher. And then, you know, Ron Moore and the rest of the writers on staff, they hated Wesley Crusher and then decided
Why?
To get rid of him. They just didn't know what else to do with him. He was too smart. So too smart and too much of a nerd. And so they said they hated him. We want to get rid of him off the show. So they make him a stupid traveler. And he fails at the academy, really. Mm. So he just bombs and they just screwed. They could have done so much with that character. and Will Wheaton, and I love him. He's just absolutely... Of course, I've never met the man. It's like every time I go someplace, he's just has gone out the door. I always miss him. But then they didn't like the old poor little Wesley Crusher. But you could have got rid of Beverly Crusher because she was a raving lunatic. I didn't really like her. Why did she ever marry Picard? This is absolutely absurd. And then they got a divorce.
Why does Picard need to get married?
Yeah, why would he?
I would take the Enterprise out like it was my Corvette and be like, you want to go for a ride?
Here, so you'll appreciate this. So Patrick Stewart, I don't care if he's listening. Is he listening? So he wanted me to write him a romance. And so I had moved out to L.A. and got a job at Paramount Pictures because I wanted to write for Star Trek Next Generation. I really kind of had a thing for Patrick Stewart, but I had been warned by people that said, if you're a screenwriter, do not approach an actor and do not write a script for an actor. Just write it for the show, right? Hmm. Don't, because you're going to deal with some egos. So I didn't really realize this. But so I'm digging me. So I love Captain Picard a lot.
Nice.
So, but I'm confused Captain Picard with Patrick Stewart. So anyway, I find up and introduce myself to Patrick Stewart. He wants me to write him a romance. And I find out he is having an affair with the gal that played the archaeologist that's Q's friend. So when you're going to watch all the dailies, could they kiss any more than what they are? And you don't see this, of course, of any of the episodes. So I'm bullshit. I'm mad. I think, oh my God, he's having an affair with another woman. I was in love. I'm going to show him. So I wrote a script where he had to wear a wig. Oh, let me tell you. So when he reads this script, he launched that script across the bridge. That thing, I don't like this script, and I don't like wigs, and good luck with your life, and good luck with your career, and got behind. And, oh, my God, and I'm crying. He hurled that thing. And so then he's on the Jay Leno show. And so Jay Leno's like, hey, Patrick, has anybody ever, you know, written a script where he had to wear? Actually, I did write a script where I had to wear a wig. And so that, but he admitted that he'd been in a bad mood that day, that there had been a young writer from Kansas that moved to L.A. to specifically write a script for him. And I thought, isn't this nice? But it wasn't to my face. So Patrick Stewart, you kind of still owe me an apology for hurling the script on my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long were you on the show for?
So I kind of screwed around with those folks for 4 years. So I can't even tell. So I must have gone in. I can't even tell how many times I went in to pitch. So you'd go in and you pitch story ideas. So you would go in and pitch 5 different ideas. And so you take a deep breath and have story pitches anywhere from 1 minute to 2, like one sentence. So just spit it all out. And then if they would want to talk more about it, they would. So the best is, I won't say names, and this is all true, so whatever. So an hour later, after we're talking about a story idea, the next day, one of the producers calls me back, and she'd gone to OU like I did. So we were both, you know, Sooners. And so one of the other writers came up with the same story idea. Well, yeah, wouldn't you? Because I just spent the whole day yesterday with the writing staff talking about it. So now you don't have to pay me $18,000 and give me a screen credit because you've come up with the idea with your own Scooby-Doo twist. So that back then, Star Trek was one of the few TV shows that took and anybody could send a script in. You didn't have an agent. You didn't have to go through anyone. Yeah. So they would get, so they had like 5 readers. So they would get about 500 scripts per month. And then they would help themselves to the plethora of scripts and Tell us your story. So they kind of had a reputation around L.A. So then another, this is good Scott about. So another friend of mine, he sold a script. And I won't say names, but he sold a script. But they were going to pay him less. So you're supposed to get $18,000. However, if you get a based in part or a half a credit, you get paid less, obviously. So anyway, he was involved with one of the producers. She gave him a memo, and it would say, see so-and-so script, page 510, use directly. And so he took this memo. He sued Star Trek. He got a screen credit. He got $18,000. He got fired from Paramount and blackballed from Hollywood. So you're thinking, is it really worth it? So if they wanted to take your story idea, let them. Be happy with it and, you know, play again. Try again next time. So, and I had something similar. So one of my scripts, I wish I could really tell you. I could tell you off air. I could tell you the true thing. But okay. It was between me and another gentleman who's extremely famous right now. And so they gave him my script to rewrite. And so he rewrote it, and he got the staff job on Not Me. And so then Patrick Stewart, because Patrick Stewart really is a lovely man, he pulled me aside and said, you know, always make sure if you write for a TV show that you go through the WGA, so the Writers Guild. You register your script, so if it does get taken or used, then you can do something about it. So there's a good lesson for any young screenwriter. See, what do you do to protect yourself? Just all you do is just mail your script to the Writers Guild Association, pay a small fee, and your script's protected, and then if somebody takes it or uses it, you use their attorneys, and then they'll go after whatever TV show, whoever took your script.
So then how did you break in to get to Paramount? Because sounds a fascinating story.
Wait, yes, it is. So here's the true story. So I got a job at Paramount Pictures, and so way back when, say, like, I got it through a temp agency as a secretary. So back when, like 1988, Kansans, if you came out to L.A., people thought we were really hard workers, which we are, because you'd work 10 hours a day and not complain and not ask for insurance and just give me a little water and pat me on the head and I'm good for the day. So I got a job at Paramount through the temp agency and then finally ended up working for the president at Paramount Pictures. So there's some really crazy stories with that. But with the Star Trek, so I had written a lovely Wesley Crusher story. So I went into Michael Piller's office and his secretary looked at me and she goes, do you have an appointment? And I go, no, I don't. And I opened up his door and I walked on in. He's sitting there. He looks up and he's like, who the hell are you? And I go, well, if you're looking for a good Wesley Crusher story, this is it. And I put it on his desk and I turned and walked out. And then he called me the next day and he said, you got really big balls coming in here like that. He goes, come back. I want to meet you. So, you know, literally that's what you had to do. You had to go above and beyond what everyone else is doing and act extremely confident, even if you weren't. And so then at that point, then I got invited to come in and pitch story ideas. And so then they were considering whether or not then to have me on staff. And then that was a whole other run in the gauntlet thing.
So you literally kicked in the door to Hollywood.
I did. He kicked it in, walked right on in and said, this is the best. Buy it, get it. And so that's how it happened. And
so once you turned in that script, did they stay pretty true to what you wrote? Or how many hands started touching it and...
After that, so you could be sure you would have at least five different pairs of hands touching it and changing it. So, and it would get a little bit of frustrating, and then you would see your idea kind of metamorphose into something else. But then after a while, you got to appreciate the fact that even if they wanted to use it right, that's a compliment. So get over yourself. Why does it have to be pure exactly what you said?
Because now, I mean, that's forever because
right, it's forever.
One of the most popular shows ever.
Absolutely.
So you can always be like, I did that.
That's
Did you
right.
work on anything else at Paramount, like Friday the 13th?
No, I had... This is the best. So, Dean R. Koontz. They were making the movie Phantasm. So, I got asked to write the last 10 pages of the script that they didn't like. So, anyway, I didn't like the last 20 pages of the script. Needless to say, when I went in and I had lunch with the producers, they're like, because right, one page in a script is a minute of airtime.
Yeah.
So instead of writing 10 pages, I wrote 20 pages and they didn't buy it. So I had offers, but I would notoriously slam the door in my own face when I was out there. I would do something to insult someone to make sure I wouldn't get the job. And then after I sold so I had my screen credit now with Star Trek, and now I had a Hollywood agent. So I'm thinking I'm going to write for some different shows. She takes my Star Trek script. She sends it back to Star Trek, and they write me a letter to say, we've already purchased this script. We wouldn't buy it again. So I had to call up the Hollywood agents and say, you know what? You're a dumb fuck. Why in the hell would you take my script and send it back to Star Trek? It was to be shopped to other TV shows. And so I thought, after a while, I thought, you know what? I think maybe movies and me and TV are not the right gel. Because it's political. It's bullshit. It's not just you writing a story and dealing with an agent or publishing house. It's everything else. And then the director's couch as well. And so then young women in the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, you know, women now are stepping forward, right, and then saying, you know, they had somebody harass them or you had to have sex with someone to get it. It was just like that for me way back when, and it's like, I could join that group. You know what? I said no. I literally walked away, so the guy that wrote, I guess I kind of be careful not to name drop. There was some Academy Award winning screenwriter who said, hey, I'll put you up as my mistress for 6 months. You can have a beach house on Venice Beach if you sleep with me. But he looked like Walter Matthau, right? He had like the skinny, the chicken neck skin on his neck. I'm thinking, if that's indication of what your ball sack and penis looks like, I don't want that. That ain't going to happen. So I said no, right? And you're thinking, what's the guarantee here if I sleep with you that I'm going to get... So that did go on, but here's a lovely story. Speaking of penises... I guess, can I go ahead and just say
yes.
All right, what the hell. So it's 10:30 at night, and I'm at the gym working out, and suddenly there's this really handsome man with the beard, wearing a bath towel. He's got a hairy chest, standing in the doorway looking at me. Well, I'm the only one in the gym, so you are looking at me.
Yeah, you
so
know.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to take the bait because he's good looking. So I'm walking up. He walks down the hallway, and he stops in front of the sauna. He turns and stops, and he turns around. So it's Jonathan Frakes. So at this time, and so I've been corrected by some of his co-stars, because sometimes I do Star Trek cons.
Mm-hmm.
So he is still married to Jeannie Francis, but at that time he's married to Jeannie Francis, and she's 8 months pregnant. He has a large herpes on his lip. He's looking at me, and you're thinking, I know what he wants. So he walks into the sauna. He lays down. He had a little teeny towel over his penis. Look, this is my trouble with Tribble story. So the little towel falls, and the man is hairy. I like hairy men, but if you can't find it, because the pubic hair is so dense. So I just saw it, and he looked at me, and he waggled his finger at me, and I ran so fast. I said no to the Commander Riker. I'm not going to sample your little Tribble. Not going to do it. So I ran from that. And then here's a kind of funny story. And William Shatner did not proposition me, but boy, he is the biggest ass in the world, but delightful. A delightful jerk. So my first encounter with him, I'm walking down the sidewalk, going to the kiosk at Paramount Pictures, and you see this little pair of tennis shoes. Your eyes travel, gray sweatpants, my eyes go on up. This picker, the little picker, he's flipping back and forth. I'm thinking, who the hell would walk around Paramount Pictures with no jockstrap? Well, William Shatner would. And his penis now has drawn my attention. So it's like for the next few days, everywhere I would go, it's William Shatner. And so Jerry Goldsmith is laying down the soundtrack to Star Trek V. So they have the orchestra of 250 people, Jerry Goldsmith, and I'm working for Gary Lucchese, who's the president of Paramount Pictures. In the sound booth, it's just me, no one else, and there's Jerry Goldsmith, and, you know, I'm really happy.
Yeah.
The door opens, someone comes walking in, and I turn to look, and it's William Shatner and his two young girls. Now, there's a lot of seating in the sound booth, but I'm on the couch in the middle. So he comes right up to me, and he looks at me, but he doesn't say anything. So he's just staring at me, and I go, would you like me to move? And he nods, yes, he would. So I get up and move. Five times this happens. Five times that door opens, and five times somebody comes in, and William Shatner looks at me, but he doesn't speak to me. He looks at me, and I'm like, would you like me to move to another seat? Yes, he would. And finally, I've had it. Now I'm mad. So I got up and said, I'm not here for you. I'm here for Jerry Goldsmith. You know, fuck you. And I storm out. So and I go back to Gary Lucchese's office, and I did get fired that day. Suzette was the number one secretary. And, she and I had words about William Shatner, so I get fired. She goes, I knew you weren't demure and shy like you came off. No, I'm not. I'm an alpha. But I'm going to pretend that I'm demure and shy. So, but it was just kind of funny. So I lost my job that day only to be hired by another producer the next day, but I'm kind of annoyed with William Shatner. Yeah. And then I found out that day this is Star Trek V, wife number five getting a divorce. The divorce petition was in Gary Lucchese's office, and this thing's like 30 pages long. And so his wife is divorcing him of one of the things for not taking him, or he did not take her to see Coco the gorilla at the LA Zoo. And this is in her divorce petition. She's suing William Shatner for not taking, you want to go see the gorilla? Get in the damn car and go to the zoo yourself. Why is he in trouble for that? But he is. So, and then he didn't put her in the movie. But it's a horrible movie anyway. Who would want to be in it? So, and then even Gene Roddenberry hated this movie so much. He told William Shatner and Harve Bennett, there's all these memos back and forth. You know, I hate you. You hate me. Don't make this movie take my name off of it. And so if you look at Star Trek V, Gene Roddenberry's name is not on it. He said, I don't want to be associated with this piece of crap. This is awful. Can't stand it. And so at the same time, now William Shatner, don't sue me, he has a girlfriend. And so he's breaking up with his girlfriend as well. So he takes her gear stuff, puts it on top of the RV. So she climbs up a ladder to get it. She falls off. She breaks her hip. So she's suing him. So now you've got two women suing William Shatner. What, are you going to offend any other women? So I'll not finish up here. So I'm in a so I'm between sound stages. So I have a girlfriend standing there, and she goes, "Oh my God, I love William Shatner. I would do anything to meet him." And you keep running into him. I'm like, "Oh no, he's an asshole. He's a jerk. He's a horrible man. He treats women terrible." "Oh no, I love him. I love him." And so I've gone on to trash him some more. But you can feel someone's watching us, right? So I finally I step and I look, and standing behind her is William Shatner. I don't know how long he's been there, but he's laughing. And so I finally told my girlfriend, "If you really want to meet William Shatner, he's right behind you." So she turned around, saw him, burst into tears, and she ran away. And I said, "You're an asshole." And he laughed and walked away.
See, yeah, how many people can say that to his face?
I mean, come on. These are good stuff.
That's a great story. So how did you transition into being a novelist? Is because you got tired of Hollywood?
I did. It just got to be so aggravating. And, you know, like I had... Disney was considering something. It was a matter of your ego, right? How mm-hmm. quick can your ego take? And you'd submit stories to different TV shows or to different studios to make a movie, and when they would turn it down, it became too depressing, and I thought, this is not really what I want. I really want to write fiction, right? I want to be able to spend the time to go home and write a novel and have people enjoy it. I don't want someone to turn around and say, it's not good enough, so we're not going to do it, because... Mm-hmm. That's not really why I was a writer in the first place. And I only became a screenwriter because I only wanted to write for Star Trek, period. We're done. That's all I wanted was Star Trek. So after I got that, then my job here is done.
Yeah.
So then I said, I'm just going to go back home and then focus. And now I've got, 9 novels out.
Wow.
I've got 6 more coming out this year. I have a publisher. And then I attend Comic-Cons and just travel all around.
Wow.
That is my life.
That is quite a life. That's awesome. Where can we find you? Can we find you online?
You can. So you can find me under SuzanneLambden.com. You can find me under DeadHeartsNovel.com. You can find me under TheRealmOfMagic.com. So my Realm of Magic trilogy is really big in England right now. So I'm kind of like a hidden little gem, so people don't know how well I really do. And, you know, I've been on the New York Times bestseller, but I don't like to cock-a-doodle-doo. I want you to meet me and look at my books and say, hey, that sounds interesting, I'm going to buy it, as opposed to telling you, I want an award. I got it. I'm wearing a crown. I just want you to want to read it based on my personality, or just based on what it says on the back of the book without saying, this is the best book I've read in years, said blah, blah, blah. I hate endorsements of those kind. Your talent and what you do as an artist should be based on you, not what someone else said about you. Oh, but this book was fascinating. It was wonderful. Really? Just let me read it and talk to you, and then I can tell whether or not I'm going to like it, and then I'll read it. So I kind of have a problem with that, but that's from the Hollywood days.
Yeah, so you've written books. Has the way you've written and published books had to change because of how people consume books now? Or do you find people still get hard copies more than they get digital?
It's a good thought. So, it's funny, and you can almost tell. So a lot of people, like, they only want to read Kindles, or they only want to read e-books, and it's because then they want to go to the park, or they mm-hmm. want to go to the beach. But then, however, then you'll meet people, and they don't want to read the electronic books, because when you sit down and you look at it on a computer, it hurts their eyes, and they want to actually manually turn the pages. So right now, I think it's starting to lean back toward books, actually holding the book in your hand. And I still do, like, this weekend, if you get on Kindle for 99 cents, you can get the 4th book, Vengeful Hearts, in my Dead Heart series. So I still rely on ebooks mm-hmm. for promotional and for easy giveaways. But I think people like the hardbound book best.
Know, I do.
But this is funny, too. So then it's been a matter, if you go to an event like this and you look at all the different authors and the size of the books. So here of late, people have wanted shorter fiction, so say 100 pages versus 500 pages. So then you're looking at, you like young authors, which I would say, if you're a young author, please don't, your first book, try to publish a 500-page book. So with my first book, and I used to write huge, big 500-page novels, and I wasn't going anywhere. The agents didn't want me, publishing houses didn't want me, so I cut it down to 300 pages and wrote in a style that's fast-paced. So when you start out as a writer, nice, fast-paced story, keep it to about 300 pages, and when you get a couple of novels under your belt, then you can go 500 pages. Then you can take your time with it. But you want to build up a fan base first before you suddenly produce this huge big tome of a novel and expect readers who have no idea who you are to read it.
When you write, this is how I picture writers, because I'm not one. You have, like, it's like the board that, like, Sherlock Holmes has, where it has an idea and it branches out everywhere, and then you have to find a way to bring it all together. Does that happen?
So I'm a weird kind of writer, so I'm different. So, I have friends that take notes, and they've got on grandma's quilt and all these different notes. Or I have friends that have files in every single different character, or they interview their characters. Where I do a glossary, and when I sit down, I have no idea what I'm going to write about. A character will pop into my head, I thrust them outside and the story develops around them. And then as I'm writing, my plot is created. So my worldcraft is happening as I'm writing. Mm. And so my zombie series that started off being The Walking Dead met Red Dawn has now turned into the... So my villains, this is a huge spoiler, come from ancient Atlantis. Mm. So the ancient gods and goddesses have a form of this virus. But when I sat down to write it, it was just a zombie apocalypse. And then I decided, you know what, I'm bored. Because I knew 25 other authors that do zombie books. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to have to do a zombie book. So that I got to do something different. So with each book, I added a different genre. And so when you add a different genre... So if you started out with horror... And then you're going to add sci-fi, you're going to add romance, you're going to add suspense. You can do different things and the plot just kind of tweaks itself and branches off and does something weird.
And does that help keep you interested in the story as well if you just don't lock yourself into horror or sci-fi?
It does. I used to, when I first started, I used to outline. So from chapter 1, from chapter 20, I would outline my entire book. And I would do a character bio. So I would know everything about the background of my character. I would know exactly where the story was going to be headed. And it's boring. And so the problem as a writer is your character does not want to be stuck in the confines of your little box. So when you do an outline and you expect your character to do that, after a time, your character evolves, and they don't want to stick to the writer's stupid plot. They want to go off and do their own thing, and so you should. And so when a writer has writer's block, it's because you're insisting your character stick to the plot outline that you wanted, as opposed to letting your character do whatever the hell they want and see where the story goes. Because when you see where the story goes, that's when you get all the cool twists and turns. And that's when you get the things saying, oh, that's a cool coincidence, when it's not a coincidence. It's just your brain's working at a higher elevation and you've created something so absolutely brilliant. When later, right, when the critics come in, that, oh my God, look at all the thought. No, when a lot of thought went into the story, it's just the writer tapped into something when they were writing and all these things just kind of fell into place, but they didn't think about it as they were doing it. It just kind of happens, and that's kind of the beauty of really writing. And it's like, if you don't try as hard and just sit down and have fun and let the story take you somewhere, it's just such more, it's, for, at least for me, it's more satisfying being a writer.
Very cool.
And that's another reason to write. I didn't want to do TV anymore because I don't want to follow what you say I have to do. It's like Star Trek had the Star Trek Bible where, like, say, you'd say exactly what the characters can or can't do, what you can do in the, whenever you're writing an episode for them. And so then I preferred the freedom of writing fiction on my own.
Like too restricting on
TV.
Right,
right. And then I think when you get to a certain age, then it just was too boring for me. And so for me, the challenge is having no idea at all in my head and sitting down and seeing what
you don't strike me as a boring person.
Well, thank you. Now you made me think of something. I do have a wonderful Deep Space Nine fan fiction out there. On StarTrekFiction.com, find For the Love of Gul Dukat. Because, man, I love me some erotica with some Cardassians. And Gul Dukat, yeah. And Gul Dukat on Twitter, President Dukat, absolutely lovely on Twitter. I couldn't be more highly entertained with the satire on what current politics. It's funny stuff.
You know, I don't think
please write that story. Read that story. Because okay. It's good stuff.
I was
going
to say, write that story. I don't know. I don't know if I could write erotica.
I get a little bit embarrassed about and now when I'm looking at it. And so I would have written this like in 2001. And so it was like 500 pages. And so last year I was bored. So I took a month off. And now it's 1,200 pages. So that 500-page fan fiction thing turned into 1,200 pages. And so I cut it into four books. And I thought, I'm going to go ahead and leave the erotic in it. What the hell? Because it's Gul Dukat and Glenda Marn. Who didn't want to get some of that action?
Hey, you know what? Yeah. Maybe I do. Who knows?
Who does? I think that anybody might be as swayed. They're charming.
Well, thanks for stopping by.
Well, absolutely.
This was awesome.
Thank you very much.
You know,
I'll be
honest. I never thought I would hear stories that you told me that I heard today. Look, and that just made my day.
Excellent. Well, I'm delighted you guys let me come and talk to you. And I hope some of your listeners will check me out. And,
yeah. Do you have Twitter, Facebook, and all that jazz, too?
I do. So you'll find me. Because I am egotistical. So you just type my name as Suzanne Lambda, and you'll find me on Twitter. On Instagram, I'm on Pinterest, Facebook, and you just type in Suzanne Lambda, and then all my Star Trek fun stuff pops up, and then you can also find me at cons all over the U.S., and I'll tell you some more Captain Penis stories. They're wonderful.
You can tell us one more before you want to leave, if you want.
I'll save that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to another fantastic interview at Denver Comic Con 2018. We had an amazing time, and we look forward to seeing you again next year.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Real Nerds Podcast. Real Nerds Podcast is a production of Nebulous Visions Multimedia. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill and Plan 9 Studios for our kick-ass theme song. Also, if you're in the Denver area and you're looking for a cool place to see movies, we see them at the Alamo Drafthouse in Littleton and now also in Sloan's Lake. Thank you to Colorado Coins, Cards, and Comics for supplying us with all our comic needs, especially you, Andrew. You know who you are. And a big shout out to James's mom. I'm giving you an electronic hug that you can feel through the airwaves. Thanks for listening, and have a nice day.